with the Utah Jazz situation.
Yeah, can we please bring in a learned mind?
Is there anywhere that Will Cain is not? You see him all over ESPN on TV. You hear him, of course, every day here on ESPN 1320.
Well, I actually think we might be the final frontier, if that's what you're getting at. Yeah, it's possible.
The one and only Will Cain joining us on ESPN 1320. How are you today, Will Cain?
Fellas, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for your time.
Hey, we were just talking about ESPN. Does it annoy you when you're probably on TV with guys like Schefter, and I know they're busy, but they have to try to impress us with how busy they are by being on their phones because they might be getting texts from GMs. I know they're busy, Will, but I feel like I'm at dinner with someone and they got their phone out.
You feel like they're not giving you their full attention.
That's it.
Maybe,
exactly,
yeah.
Sir. Yes.
Yeah. Sounds like you might have had a bad relationship or two, man. I'm sorry about that. I had Josina Anderson on my show today, and I gave her a hard time about that. She literally walked on the set from offset with the phone up to her ear. You know, you got Schefter and Mortensen and all of these guys sitting at the table, and she comes on, okay, is the deal final? It's final? Okay, Landon Collins to the Redskins. It's right there, man. If you can't feel that energy, though, I don't know. That one's on you.
It's got to be different on the other end of the screen. Will, this is total switching it up, but this was the breaking news today, and I know that you addressed it not only in your show, but at the very end of your show with the Utah Jazz statement. Did the Jazz get it right? Did the NBA get it right in the Westbrook incident?
I think so. The whole key to the thing for me was the investigation. So I said that this morning on First Take, and I said it on my show, as you mentioned, that the first thing to do is the NBA's got to step in and find out what the facts are. Because the problem with these kind of incidents is between fans and players, or basically, most of the time, between anybody in society, when somebody says, he said this to me, and they say, no, he said this to me, it becomes the prototypical he said, she said. So I don't know what was said, but the NBA and or the Utah Jazz say they investigated. They have video evidence. They have eyewitness accounts of what the fan in the stands said to Russell Westbrook. They deemed it well over the line, beyond the NBA's code of conduct, and they banned him permanently from the Utah Jazz Stadium. If it's true, and I haven't heard what he said, I heard what Russell Westbrook said he said, then yeah, they got it right. I think they could have banned him for the season. I don't know about a lifetime ban. And then on the other side of the equation, $25,000 for Russell Westbrook is sort of the going rate on a fine for a player and what he says to fans. I will say Russ pushed it, man. This is further than we've seen anybody else. I mean, Kevin Durant, you know, F you know, up and down to a fan is different than saying, you know, Russell said he was gonna F him up. He's gonna physically attack him. So that's on the far end. It may not be over for Russ, by the way. I mean, I've talked about it several times. SI's legal analyst, Michael McCann, said he could be open to a suit from this fan for saying that stuff.
Yeah.
Should the, in my opinion, well, I think the NBA should view this as something of a warning. I mean, obviously you want to avoid, and they've done a great job of avoiding anything resembling a Malice in the Palace situation, but would it behoove the NBA to look at this as, we're going to dodge this bullet, but maybe something needs to be done to avoid a problem like this escalating in the future, that as in perhaps more security? Do you think the NBA needs to be proactive here?
Well, let's talk that through. Let's think about how they could avoid something like that in the future. I think that the fundamental relationship between a fan in the stands and a player, especially an opposing player, is going to be one of tension, right? We talk about home court advantage. You guys in Sacramento have an awesome one. You have always the Kings games, especially when they were good in the early 2000s and the 90s. That was someplace nobody wanted to go to play. It's because the fans were so hostile. And I'm not saying on the wrong side of the line. I'm saying on the right side of the line. But that's what the point. We want you on the right side of the line. We want booing, heckling, you know, my guy's better than you guys, and our team's better than you, and getting in their head. But there is a line. And everyone walking around the world, everyone listening right now, sees where that line is differently. Hell, I got in trouble in the last 2 days because I see a line differently than everybody else, I guess, and what I said about Antonio Brown.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you're ever going to be able to set that line with enough security and enough standards that speech isn't going to be a problem. I mean, it's going to be. It's always going to be an issue. The best they can do, honestly, the best thing to do is it's going to have to be on the reaction side. I mean, I'm not saying that Russ and these guys have to, like, obviously you have human dignity and you're a human being, but you're going to have to, like, not react. It's the hardest thing in the world, but you're going to have to.
Will, I realize on a lot of this, the horse left the barn some time ago, but how much of this dynamic is really the NBA's own doing? I mean, it sold courtside a long time ago. Now, it essentially, functionally, it sells bench access. Isn't it sort of inviting the situation, maybe not to this extent, but on a more regular basis?
Well, it's inviting interaction. I don't know that we have to say it's inviting. Interaction is clearly over the line. Man, you know what the best check on this to me is? It's going to be the people around the guy, right? It's the people, because Stephen A. Smith said this on First Take, and I agree with him. He said, ultimately, we're going to rely on the decency of human beings, of fans. Like, if I were in the stands and some guy was yelling racist stuff at a player, man, I'd have him pointed out. I'd be like, get this guy out of here. Plus, if you have kids with you, you don't want to hear that stuff. We've all been in the stands. We hear the guy who can't stop cussing or the guy who's saying stuff over the line. That's going to be the ultimate check. It's the people around him. And I trust that, ultimately. I think I trust that in the long run.
See, I think that doesn't go far enough, because I know there are some situations where people have acted and pointed out someone saying something racist or not, but something clearly wrong. And bless those people who have done that, but some people are not in a position to do that. And I've been in situations where, wow, security, arena security here, they're a little short-handed, and you've got some big, angry people that are clearly crossing a line. But who's going to – I don't think it's incumbent upon the fans always to do that. Bless those who can. And that's why I think that more security – well, I know then you open up another can of worms. I think that's a better solution than relying on the decency of fans.
Well, I'm not going to say you're wrong that more security wouldn't help, but I just think keep teasing that out. You're never going to have enough security. I mean, you'd end up with one security guard for every fan. I mean, the security guards can't hear it all. So the decency of the fan is to report it to the security guard. Mm-hmm. It's to turn the offender into a security guard. I just don't think we're going to be able to stock our arenas full of quasi cops, mall cops, enough to get enough guys out of the stadium to cross the line.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking if you have people near the bench area, buffers between the players and the fans, it might help. But hopefully, hopefully we won't deal with something like this anytime soon. Fingers crossed. And that's the NBA kind of rolling the dice on this, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Mouse in the Palace was awful.
Yeah.
It was a one-time thing. Mm-hmm. We haven't had this kind of thing. We love to make such a huge deal out of everything. And I don't know. Are we really, on the edge of some awful catastrophe in the NBA? I mean, the Mouse in the Palace was how long ago now? What was it, 15, 20? What are we looking at years ago?
Yeah, you're
well,
right.
15,
but,
yeah.
I mean, we did have, to your point, I believe you made this point, we had a player threatening a fan.
Right.
So it's been, I don't know that we've ever had anything quite like that since the Malice in the Palace.
Right. Right. But my point is, we don't have to, go back to square one and look mm-hmm. deep in the mirror and check our souls because, this was a bad incident. Mm-hmm. But, we're not on the verge of the Malice in the Palace. We don't have to, check all of our security protocols once. I mean, use it as a warning. That's fine. But I don't think we need to freak out over it.
Fair enough. Will Cain with us on ESPN 1320.
We'll switch up and talk football for a minute. Is Le'Veon Bell, you think, Will, finding out that market wasn't as robust as maybe he would have imagined the landscape, I don't know, 6 months ago?
I think so. I think that what we're learning, because the surprising thing is here, we enter free agency and guys are off the market right away. You know, right away it opens up and we start, oh yeah, Nick Foles to the Jags. and then we're 36 hours or so into this verbal commitment stage and we don't have anything on Le'Veon Bell. My guess is he'll end up getting a lot of money because that whole cliche of people say it only takes one team. It's true. Only one team has to step up to pay. But I don't think Le'Veon Bell is getting the bidding war that he thought he was going to get. And I really am curious, is he going to get Todd Gurley's at $14 million a year, David Johnson's at 13, and then there's a pretty big drop down to $8 million for Devonta Freeman and Saquon Barkley and guys like that. So I'm curious, will Le'Veon Bell, be up there at the top of it, up there at the $14 million range, if there's nobody really bidding for him, no big competitive bidding process? And by the way, you guys can answer this. Do you think Todd Gurley's season made you more or less comfortable on paying a running back $14 million?
Yeah, so much less. I mean, the offseason may have made it worse yet. With sort of the whole arthritis conversation.
Exactly. Right, right. So do you use the first three quarters of the season to go, hey, that guy was an MVP candidate. Yeah, we should give big-time running backs $14 million. Or do you look at the end of the season and go, he's kind of hurt, C.J. Anderson stepped up, maybe you don't have to give running backs that big of money.
I think you're probably there, yeah.
You impressed by what the Raiders have done so far, or a little bit of a head-scratcher, somewhere in between?
Total head-scratcher for me.
Yeah.
I kind of defended John Gruden's plan when everybody was crushing him on trading Khalil Mack, and then Amari Cooper, because the idea for me was, okay, you're putting your window several years off and into the future, right? You're stacking up on first-round draft picks. You're looking at a 10-year contract, John Gruden, and you're hoping to compete in year 4, 5, 6. Well, now you've turned one of those – well, you signed a 31-year-old wide receiver, and he's great. He's great. He's a game-changing wide receiver. But he's 31. How does he fit your window? I just don't get it. If they went on Le'Veon Bell as well, then I think that was interesting. Okay, now you got a new plan, a different plan. But just Brown to a young team that wasn't very good seems odd.
That's it, isn't it? It's hard to see that there is any plan there whatsoever with John Gruden right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Is there a single best move, or is there a move that you've loved the most since the free agency
period?
Nick
Foles, baby. Great move, Nick Foles. They should have given him more guaranteed money.
I actually do like Nick Foles to the Jags. I do. And if that doesn't work out, I think that's on the Jags. The guy's proven. Won a Super Bowl.
Right.
Been the MVP. $22 million. I mean, it's kind of the going rate for a franchise quarterback. That puts you in like Alex Smith-ish range, you know? And you got John DeFilippo, the guy who was his quarterback coach in Philadelphia. He's going to coordinate your offense. If you can't tailor that to putting Nick Foles in a situation where he can succeed, because if everybody's like, you know, Nick Foles is a creature of the system, and he was just in the perfect environment in Philadelphia. Well, John DeFilippo, can't you create something similar to that in Jacksonville? Nick Foles should work. I like it.
Sweet.
The one and only Will Cain. How do you like TV as opposed to radio? And I know a lot of times you're on both, but which way? If the pay were the same, which would you choose?
Right. That's right. If the pay were the same, also the hours. You got to factor in the hours.
Yes, right? Of course.
Like, radio is longer hours.
Yeah.
I like radio better.
There you go.
I really do, man. The relationship that you guys get to build with your audience there in Sacramento, and the relationship that I hope I'm building with my audience, I've seen it, man. I've seen it in different genres, you know, from news and politics to sports. It's unique. I've owned small town newspapers. I've been in TV, and now I think radio is the best. Like, as far as making a connection with the audience, it's the best.
The Willisha, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
it's on its way, man. Thank you, Will. Thanks so much. We appreciate your time.
We'll talk to you soon, Will Cain.
Appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you. Take care. The one and only Will Cain on ESPN 1320.
Yeah, there he goes.
Mm-hmm.
As confused about Antonio Brown as I am, I feel better now.